We welcome Federal News Radio commentator Loretta Doan to the studio. Thank you for coming in today. In spite of the weather, you're here.
I'm glad to be here, Francis.
I'm glad you're here, and for somebody who espouses telework as heartily as you do, I think it says a lot that despite the weather, you trooped on in here to have our little discussion about the stimulus.
Well, I couldn't resist the joy of showing you physically what the stimulus looked like with all of these binders, these three-inch binders, four of them in number, sitting across the table from you. I had to show you what we're talking about.
I'm looking forward to digging into the stimulus with you, and you've read it and analyzed it and so on and so forth. I'm excited to hear what you have to say, but I want to talk about this first. This is a little, it's called a netbook, and about, 3 weeks or so ago, I emailed you and I said, are you familiar with netbooks? And you said, yes, I have one. I use one. I really like it, and so you're a fan. And the reason I was asking you is because in about 2 weeks, we're going to start what I call the working title of it is the In-Depth Technology Board, IDTP, IDTB.
Well, it's the government. We have to have an acronym.
Have to have an acronym, of course. And that was part of the thinking that went into the title is what would make a good acronym. And periodically, we're going to look at different kinds of technology that we think may have a use in the federal government. This idea, in my mind, was actually inspired by your telework initiative at GSA, and that is the fact that, for the most part, these netbooks, the one that I'm holding is a Lenovo, and we're going to review a number of other ones, but these netbooks are really light. They're fully functional. Some of them even have Windows XP and a large enough hard drive that they can use any kind of productivity software. But it seemed to me that for coop planning, for telework, any time that you have somebody that needs to be mobile, these things are a good idea. And after I did a little bit of legwork and found out there aren't a lot of agencies that have used them, CIO at GSA, Casey Coleman, has said she started to look into them because of the things that we're going to talk about when we review them. But there are some people getting interested in them in the federal government. So I've reached out to some of the vendors. They're going to supply us with units to review these machines. We're going to have a representative from the company. We're going to have you, and we're going to have the former CIO at the Transportation Department, Dan Mintz, is going to be joining us on this panel, and I'm just really excited about it. I'm excited to play with technology, and I'm excited to introduce people in the federal government to a new kind of technology that may really be a problem solver.
I think it's not only a problem solver, but in light of everything that's been happening with the stimulus, with the budgets, both 09 and 10, having cost-cutting measures are going to be in the forefront of everyone's mind. And the other thing about these netbooks are they are so cheap compared to the average laptop or desktop sort of platform that the average government worker uses. And I think it really could be, when we look at the tech refreshes that government agencies tend to go through, it's going to be a way for them to find ways to cut their costs in these upcoming years.
When you, just if you don't know, it's fine because this isn't anything anywhere near what we planned on talking about to start with, so I apologize for that. But when you're gonna refresh a set of laptops, say when you were at GSA, and the boxes cost $600 or $700 a piece, I imagine, till you get them outfitted with FDCC and all the rest of it, all the other security measures that need to go on there, it's probably a fair price,
well,
don't you
think you have to go up a little,
really?
Bit. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, a laptop is running, you know, in the thousands. You're not.
Okay. So when we see these that sticker at around $300, between $300 and $400, the potential cost savings, I think, is really amazing.
Oh, absolutely, because just the base cost of the unit is one-third of the cost of the average laptop that the government's going to be using. And those come fully loaded already with the operating system, and then it's just a matter of loading a common platform for the office automation software and things of that nature. And as you said, there's some security software that has to be on it. But just the basic hardware platform is one-third of the cost.
Okay.
So that's automatically going to show a savings.
Well, in about 2 weeks, we'll dig into all this, and I'm looking forward to your viewpoint on these things for operationally and acquisition-wise and so on. And Dan, of course, is going to really drill into it from a functionality, security, all those kinds of things from that viewpoint. And then my role is going to be just kind of as an end user. I'm the guy that Dan's people walks in and says, here's your new machine. This is what you're going to live with for the next couple of years as you travel on the road and so forth, and how, you know, I'm going to be talking about silly stuff like the size of the keyboard and how my thumb drives plug in and all that jazz. So,
and is it really plug and play?
Yeah, well, that'll be part of it. So that's going to be in about 2 weeks, the second week in March, I want to say. I kind of channeled Charlie Callis there for a second. And we'll have more details on that on federalnewsradio.com. And I thank you for participating, and I think it's going to be fun, and we're going to be able to help give people some good information. Now, let's talk about what prompted you to want to dig into the stimulus package as heavily as you've dug into it, because you've got, as you said, the 4 3-inch binders, and you've got your notes and the observations that you've made, and you've got stuff flagged and everything. What piqued your interest about this so heavily?
Well, first, Francis, you know I love the numbers. I believe that cash flow is destiny. I believe that when you look at how an individual or any entity prioritizes their spending, you can truly understand what their priorities are, regardless of whatever rhetoric or, you know, verbiage they may use to describe what they believe their priorities are. The way they allocate their funding is a great indication of priorities. The second thing, of course, and if you look back, probably starting as far back as August of 2008 at some of my op-eds on Leadership Matters, you will see that fiscal discipline and budget cutting have always been prime concerns, both, you know, in this current age right now that we're in where spending is out of control, as well as even when I was the GSA administrator. And so it's a big interest to me. But the last thing that I thought would be interesting to talk about is because the extraordinary statement, it's almost mind-boggling. It's impossible to consider that Congress could have passed a bill that no one read.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about you and your life, and, you know, imagine if you got a bill from your credit card company for, say, I don't know, $1 million. And you looked at it and you'd say, you know, I don't have time to read this bill. I'm just going to pay it right now because, you know, I just don't have time to read it.
Mm-hmm.
You'd never do that, not in your personal life. No business would do this. So why the federal government did this is just inexplicable. So that, of course, piqued my curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And if nothing else, I wanted to see, what does it take to belong to the elite club of folks in D.C. who've actually read the stimulus? And
mm-hmm.
what it takes is about 3 reams of paper.
Mm-hmm.
It takes about 2 hours of printing if you have a printer that can print about 30 pages per minute.
Ouch.
Black. And it also takes a willingness to sit there and either hole punch or buy the hole punch paper. And then you have to sort it because, of course, by the time you get the different versions, the conference notes between Senate and the House on it, it becomes a pretty bulky package.
So you did this all yourself?
Yes.
You did this all just on your own initiative? You had no...
No, and I encourage every American citizen to do the very same thing because this is your money they're spending, and you should know what they're doing with it.
Well, that would stimulate the economy, if nothing else, for hole punchers and paper. That would keep the office supply stores in good shape. All right, so you did all this, and then obviously you didn't just put in the binders and put it on the shelf. You started to pick through it.
Well, the first thing that I thought is, and is trying to get your mind, your hands, your psyche around the numbers that we're talking about. So first of all, by the way, there's probably going to be a huge business for calculators now because we need to have new calculators that allow you to have some more zeros on it.
So mine only have 8 digits.
Well, there is a problem. So 1 million is 6 zeros, billion is 9 zeros, and trillion is 12 zeros on top of any other number. So
mm-hmm.
people have to keep that in their mind. But the numbers are mind-boggling, and they're hard to comprehend. So I tried to think about $787 billion is a huge amount of money. And by the way, if you think about the bill that the FY10, you know, the fiscal year 2010 budget that President Obama just presented to Congress for $3.6 trillion, if you just took those two items and added them together, so let's say you're ballparking a little over $4 trillion. See, we keep stumbling over.
Yeah, it's easy to do.
I tried to say, what is $4.2 trillion or $4.3 trillion? What is this really? And so here's a little factoid. A human has about 42 million heartbeats per year
mm-hmm.
that your body will go through. You know, day, night, sleeping, awake, it doesn't matter. Your heart beats about 42 million times. In order to imagine how much $4.2 trillion is, it's as if we were paying $1 million for every one of your heartbeats for a year. whether you're sleeping or awake. And I thought, wow, that's a really scary number. But to me, it was really, really scary because when Congress is making these decisions with this money, your money, my money, you know, any American citizen who's paying tax money, we don't actually have enough money to pay for all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So 40% of that is actually money that they're now borrowing from foreign markets.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going out to, you know, other countries, begging them, pleading with them, you know, please, you know, help buy our bonds, you know, help support us in these spending endeavors. So that, mm-hmm. to me, was really, really scary. So then I started thinking, well, right now, we have what I consider sort of the layering effect. Do you remember Encyclopedia Britannica?
Sure.
Okay, remember the anatomy section? You
yeah.
had these cellophane pages.
Yeah.
And when you looked at it, it was pretty bare, but you had to layer two or three pages on top of it. And
mm-hmm.
only after you did that could you get the veins and the muscles and everything that made up the human body. And then you could get a full picture of the human.
Yes.
That's what our financial situation is like right now, because if you remember, Congress never passed the FY09 budget
right.
in the timely fashion they ought to have.
Just passed the CR
exactly.
last week.
So you've got the FY09 budget, you've got the first stimulus, the bailout, the second economic stimulus, of course the FY09 budget, the FY10 budget, which President Obama just presented to Congress. And it's only after you layer all of these that we are really going to be able to get an understanding of what did we commit ourselves to. But no matter how I look at it, when I look at the dollars, I was trying to look at other equivalencies, just the stimulus alone comes out to be approximately $1 million a day for every day since the birth of Christ.
The way that you cut these things, Loretta, leads me to think that you're either incredibly, amazingly brilliant, like on a genius level, or completely insane.
Well, I think the sad part about it is that unless we can get our hands, our arms, our brains around these numbers and how the monies are being spent, probably most of us are going to go insane.
All right.
Because, you know, the economic markets are not exactly showing confidence in this plan.
No, so. That's true. We'll talk about that some more when we come back from the break. Federal News Radio commentator Loretta Doane. More on the stimulus when we return on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about the stimulus package with Federal News Radio commentator Loretta Doane, who has printed it all out and put it into binders. And you have actually done your own little stimulus there by going out and buying all this junk from the office supply store. It's not
cycle
cheap.
My binders, Francis. You don't know me.
Well, I do know you, and I just wanted to see if you would stick up for yourself there.
Well, that's why they're a little mismatched here in color.
Well, that's all right. Nobody needs to know that.
Exactly.
It's not for show. It's for informational purposes only. Now, as you started to go through this and read these reams of paper that you printed out, what did you see about how the package will directly affect the way things work at the agencies?
That is actually a great question, Francis, because my first concern is the fact that most agencies may be on target to actually failing the first of the many tests put to them with the stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look through the stimulus, it's divided into a bunch of different sections, both by cabinet agencies as well as some sub-cabinet level agencies and funding that's being allocated to them, as well as entitlement programs. And if you go on the internet, and there's a bunch of different sites that you can go to look at the stimulus, they'll also have what they call the conference notes, which are the debates that went back and forth, the arguments between the Senate and the Congress before the bill was passed. So you've got all that. But when you look through it, I'm struck by the fact that there are just a ferocious amount of reporting requirements, and all of the reporting, some of the reporting is due as quickly as 30 days from the date of signing, which means that by next week, the reports are due to Congress, the first set of reports. And maybe the longest lead time I've seen for initial reports is 90 days, which is 3 months in government time for programs that are bigger than any amount of money we have ever spent in the history of this country. 90 days is not very
much. That's a snap of the fingers.
So I'm concern that, sadly, this is the first of many requirements that we will see being flunked. So there's a lot of requests where within 30 days you have to go to Congress, if you're a particular agency, and explain to Congress how you intend to allocate the money. So the way the stimulus is developed, they have large chunks of funding that are being handed to the agency with very slim guidelines. And then the agencies will then have to slice and dice that funding and then present that report back to Congress. Mm-hmm. One might assume that there will be another step in it where Congress will then respond back to the agency, either saying that that looks good or that won't look good. Mm-hmm. But as I kind of went through it, you may remember that when the stimulus first came up, the thing that we were told was that this was going to focus on critical infrastructure projects.
Yes.
And the one thing that's clear when you go through all of this is probably only about 10% of the funding of the $787 billion is allocated to truly critical infrastructure projects. And probably less than 30% is on infrastructure projects at all, mm-hmm. you know, overall. And so if you consider that amount of funding, the number of those that are actually shovel-ready is actually very, very few. When I was the GSA administrator, you know, it's about a seven-year cycle from conception to implementation to the day when, you cut the ribbon saying this building project is done.
Right.
And when you read through there, the stimulus makes an assumption that these programs are going to be going up, running, funded, and performing within 90 days, and that you're going to see some kind of an impact on the economy, and that just might not be possible.
Is there any kind of a provision in any of the language in this that would allow those windows to truncate a little bit, though? That you said 7 years. I recently talked to the editor of Government Leasing News, and he cited exactly the same number. From the time that the go-ahead is given to the ribbon cutting, about 7 years. Is there any provision here that would shrink that down at all?
You know, no, and that's what was so frustrating about this, and that's why I wish Congress had taken a little bit more time in it, because they had a chance to do some real good. Because what is needed in many ways to get the economy moving and to get the economy stimulated and building and infrastructure projects going is not more funding. It's actually regulatory relief. So, for example, if you're looking at a building project at the borders, at the ports of entry, and there's actually quite a bit of funding that's allocated to those endeavors, one of the biggest lead times is actually a simple piece of paper, a little document called a presidential permit, which says that you're allowed to build a new structure or an additional facility or a crossing point, or sometimes even a sidewalk at this border. That can take anywhere from 2 years to 10 years to get. That alone, to try to put some regulatory relief on it by saying, you know, if there's already an existing structure there and you want to build an additional bridge or a sidewalk or something, doesn't require a new permit, you know, that kind of regulatory relief could help. Or just putting a timeline saying, you know, if you haven't gotten back with a no within 2 years, then it's assumed to be approved and the agency can move forward. Another kind of regulatory relief is that every one of these projects has a series of environmental assessments, and there has to be a finding of what they call a FONSI, finding our statement of no impact. That has to occur, and you've got a whole host of different agencies that have to sign off on it. But there's no real time frame for when it has to finally be finished as an endeavor, and sometimes that can go on as many as 5 years, and that slows down the process. So there's lots of regulatory relief that Congress could have insisted upon to try to speed up these projects, and it wouldn't have cost any money.
As I scanned over this myself, which I have to confess is all the further I got into it, and then read some of the news accounts of it, there was one area in particular where I imagined your eyes perking up in particular, and that is the area of green infrastructure, because you started to work on that when you were at GSA. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about the stimulus plan and how it directly affects the agencies with Federal News Radio commentator Loretta Doan, and we'll be back with more in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Loretta Doan, who has in front of her all, what is it, 1,200 pages, you think? Reams of paper, 1,200 to 1,500 pages of printouts on the stimulus package, and all organized and bindered. I wish I had my camera. I would love to have it to be able to just take a picture of how everything, how you have everything laid out, and you have flags on some of the pages and all this stuff. And the way that you analyze these things, I think, is terrifically incisive. And I appreciate you spending your time this afternoon on a big snowy day like we have today talking about these things with me. There were some, another thing I've determined to do is I need to bring a recorder in here and have it running during the breaks when I have guests in the studio, because the conversations that we have off the air are as informative, I think, as the conversations we have on the air. You hit on a couple of bullet points before, right before we turned the microphones back on, that you wanted to make sure that we got out there, because at least as kind of a jumping off point, because there are things that haven't gotten a lot of coverage, even in the trade publications that cover the federal government exclusively. So talk about some of the things that you've seen that have really jumped out at you as striking or important in the stimulus plan, specifically for the agencies.
Well, one of the things that I see is, as Francis, as you mentioned earlier, this could have been made so much more effective as a stimulus package if the government had seen fit, if Congress had seen fit to include some regulatory relief from some of the laws that exist already on the books that slow down the process of getting projects done or funding into the private sector. Another thing that I saw that was nowhere in the stimulus at all was any kind of support for the contracting officers. And I talked about that last week in one of my op-eds on Leadership Matters. But while there is funding allocated for all sorts of administrative requirements, there is no clear indication that there's any realization from Congress at all that in order to award a building project, in order to award a special IT, you know, there's a lot of health IT technologies that are going to be espoused, or the green projects that they want, or the vehicles, any of those, even the entitlement subsidies, all of these ultimately at some point go through the hands of a contracting officer. And if you haven't increased that load, then what you have to assume is without the regulatory relief, without the increase in the number of contracting officers or the funding for them, that what's going to happen is that the contracting officers are actually going to have to move a little bit more slowly, because there is so much scrutiny on this process. And their work is made even harder by the sheer volume of reports. I haven't really compiled all of the reports, but I am just stunned. Almost on every page, there's some kind of report that's due to Congress. And you almost see where there'll be an entire team and their only job will be reporting.
Let's make that your homework assignment then. I would love to have you come back, even if you just join me shortly for a little bit by phone in a week or two.
Well, you know, there's one, I'd love to do that, because one of them that's really of concern to me is the Small Business Administration was given a lot of what appears to be helpful funding from the stimulus package to assist small businesses. But if you look at all the strings and bows and ribbons tied around this package, it's very, very difficult to execute on it. Aside from the fact that there's a very stringent requirement within 30 days, which, as I mentioned, is next week, to get back to how you're spending it, they have all these qualifying adjectives in front of the, for example, the small business loan. They said, so for example, there are qualifying businesses. So there's going to have to be a contracting officer in there determining which businesses are qualifying and which are not.
Yes.
For eligible banks, well, they don't just go with the standard banks that currently issue the loans. And so you've already created two additional requirements on contracting officers. They've got to identify which businesses qualify and which banks are considered eligible to receive this guarantee. And then it adds another criteria, which says, depending on which kinds of these loans you're getting, if you've ever had a loan before from the SBA, you're not eligible anymore. So now you've got to weed out that whole bunch of them. And then depends on the status on some parts of the language. If your loan is currently in arrears, they're willing to provide you some regulatory relief on that. But depending on what kind of loan that is, you might be out of luck. So it's very complex, and the contracting officer is going to have to navigate through the wickets of that. But the end result that I concluded when I read through the small business piece, at least, is that in the very short run, which to me would be in the next 90 days, there aren't going to be a lot of loans made available to small businesses, because the SBA has to get its ducks in a row first before it can even begin to do that.
Amazing. It's time for another break already, and I still haven't had a chance to dig into the green buildings. Can you stay for one more segment?
Absolutely, and I'd love to talk a little bit about green buildings and about some of the building programs shared between GSA and DHS and the funding allocated to that.
All right, good deal. We'll do that when we come back with Federal News Radio commentator Loretta Doan in just a moment. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, stretching out our conversation with Federal News Radio commentator and former GSA administrator Loretta Doan, who has very, very judiciously printed out the entire stimulus package, gone through it page by page, made notes. I'm looking at your work here, and I'm floored. There are phrases underlined. You have flags all over the place. I don't know how you have the time. Well, I know how you have the time to do it, but I don't think I would have the patience to sit and go through this entire thing. It's just unbelievable to me.
Well, not to be overly dramatic, but this is my children's future, because what this stimulus is doing with the new budget for FY10, they are burdening our children and even our grandchildren with generational debt that they may never be able to overcome. And Francis, one of my greatest fears is that my parents' generation has been named the greatest generation.
Mm-hmm.
I am so concerned that we will be called the selfish generation, because we are not caring for our children's future. And so, yes, I'm boring into this because I'm just stunned by the sheer weight of the debt that we're burdening them on. You know, just a weird factoid at the break. This morning they announced the AIG debacle.
Mm-hmm.
$165 billion and growing. And for whatever reason, the federal government is even thinking they might bail it out some more. And I was stunned by that, because most people may not realize that is three times the amount of money that we allocate in appropriations for the State Department. So we're taking one business and bailing it out to the tune of $165 billion when we only give the State Department $51 billion.
I have not seen measurement metrics like that. And I think that's a fascinating thing, because one of the things that I learned very quickly after starting to work with Mike Causey, our senior correspondent, the question that he always asks, a great journalist that he is compared to what? And so to hear you make a comparison like that is fascinating. And it's not something that I think most people, even nowadays, most journalists do, is to take literally any kind of number, any kind of performance metric, and ask the question, compared to what? So to hear you compare it to something like that, I think is fascinating. Before the break, we talked a little bit about, you mentioned you wanted to bring up something that you saw in there about DHS.
Yeah, when I looked in, they have a section that is allocated toward real property activities, which is, you know, buildings and grounds, infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is the funding is divided and allocated to GSA, to the General Services Administration, and some of it is allocated over to the Department of Homeland Security. And it covers a whole host of different items. Some of it, for example, at GSA will go toward enhancing the green buildings and, you know, improving them. And, of course, to me, when I saw that, I thought, well, that's actually a little bit ironic, because many years ago, and actually over three or four-year period, GSA allocated millions and millions of dollars to renovating all of the federal buildings and ensuring that they adhere to some basic environmentally friendly green standards with the light fixtures and things like that. Ironically, Congress has not met those same standards, but the GSA federal buildings actually have. And so when you see money allocated to that, can more be done? Yes, but will that actually stimulate the economy? Probably not. Can it be done in the very near future? It's hard to know, because right now GSA already has a commitment to doing what they call the LEED standard, which is the engineering and environmental standard that every building has to achieve for energy efficiency. And they have different levels, you know, so they have the gold, the silver, the bronze, you know, mm-hmm. kind of like that. But GSA buildings, so all federal buildings, whether they're built with the FBI, the SSA, Social Security Administration, or GSA buildings, DHS buildings, they already have to adhere to that green standard. That's built into it. So the idea that they allocated funding in the stimulus for that is actually disturbing to me, because there's a little bit later on where it talks about the fact that the secretaries, and it's in almost every area, the secretaries have reprogramming at will powers. And that's, of course, disturbing, because come April of every year, most agencies do reallocate funding, but they reallocate that funding without the visibility of Congress. Congress never gets to see how that money is reallocated.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is Congress approves money at a certain level. That's how Congress believes that money should best be spent, those taxpayer dollars. The agencies are supposed to spend it for those endeavors, but often do not. They then reallocate portions of that funding in April, but Congress never knows that that funding never went to their originally intended project. And that, to me, is something that that loophole isn't really cleaned up in mm-hmm. this stimulus. Another thing that I saw is, for example, in the DHS portion of it, it says that they're going to allocate another $200 million toward a centralized headquarters for DHS, which, of course, is St. Elizabeth's, which is here in Washington, D.C. And it talks about for planning, design, construction costs, site security, IT infrastructure, fixtures, et cetera, et cetera. But when you look at that, $200 million seems like a huge, huge, huge amount of money. But if you look at what is really needed to build DHS, which is in the billions, this is only a portion of it. Well, the way we're back to regulatory relief again, the way the laws are written right now for GSA and for other agencies that are building buildings, until you have the total amount that's allocated, you can't truly start to build. You're not truly approved to build that building until you've got all the money to pay for it up front. So while this advances it, and while it certainly creates a huge amount of debt for us and our children, it doesn't actually allow them to complete the project.
Mm-hmm, because they don't have all the money.
Exactly. And so when you have that, you have a risk that people will try to spend the money, but it won't necessarily be spent in the most efficient way possible. And then, of course, there's always the risk that it will be squandered. Mm-hmm. And so when I read through this, that's just one of several line items in the stimulus bill that I find cause for concern.
There are a million things that we could talk about this, and I'm grateful that you've spent even more time than we planned on having you here to do it. But I want to go back to what we talked about in the first segment, and that is the reporting requirements that seem to be poised to put a lot of pressure on people at these agencies. And I would like to see if you would seriously be willing to do a little bit more research on that and come back and talk about that.
I'd be happy to do that. I would like to talk also a little bit about a trickle-down effect, which mm-hmm. is that for every bit of funding that's in here, a lot of it is being allocated for building projects, is just one example, to state and local governments. Mm-hmm. And the same issues, whether it's the regulatory relief that's needed or the contracting officers, applies. The same difficulty the federal government is having, the state and local governments have also, because their contracting force has been depleted also. Mm-hmm. So you might hand that money to them for the bridge, but now they don't have the wherewithal, the force of the contracting staff to be able to make the judgments, to make the awards in that quick, timely fashion that Congress is anticipating. Mm-hmm. And so that, to me, you know, is yet another matter for concern.